Hi, I'm Tara Lynn of Geek Saga Entertainment, here with my co-host Manny for the not so new anymore, but still the newest Geek Saga show series, The Media That Made Us. This series will focus on media that the two of us consumed in our younger or maybe even just slightly younger years, media that helped shape our current interests and that we still love.
So I'm Manny, and for our third Media That Made Us episode, we're continuing our coverage of the reimagined Battlestar Galactica series and discussing what we're calling the Aftermath arc, aka the aftermath of Boomer's attempt on Adama's life, which includes episodes 1 through 9 of season 2.
Before we get started, just a heads up that you can follow me and therefore all of the Geek Saga endeavors at A Geek Saga on Facebook, Instagram, Threads, TikTok, Twitter, and YouTube.
And you can find me on Facebook and Instagram at Manissimo Art.
Last but hopefully not least, we hope that you'll check out the Geek Saga Entertainment Patreon with 10 tiers ranging from $1 a month to $40 a month. It's a great way to support us and receive some fun perks in return, including early access to all podcast versions of our live episodes, but also all podcast-only episodes, which is probably like the more important because you can always catch these live ones later. They do remain up on my YouTube and Facebook. So you can check out that at patreon.com/geeksaga_entertainment.
Our format for these episodes includes our top 5 moments that made it, basically our hot takes from the portion of the series we're covering, followed by any insights we've uncovered from rewatches and or being longtime fans.
And since we have 9 episodes from the second season to cover, let's get into our top 5 moments that made it. Number 1 is from the season 2 premiere. The episode is called Scattered, and this is Ty's first major action as the big man in charge, which is to order an emergency FTL jump that leaves the Kobol survey team abandoned. And when the Galactica arrives at the jump coordinates, the fleet isn't there. And also, not to mention, he orders this jump knowing that Doc Cottle is on another ship. So the fleet not being there is bad in like so many different ways, because in this case, especially, Adama is in like really bad shape. And while there is some medical staff aboard the Galactica, it's not Doc Cottle. And he's, you know, the big doc.
Yep. He's apparently the only doctor on the fleet, you know, like the only like main bigwig doctor in all of human life at this point. The way this unfolds is in very classic Battlestar Galactica fashion, right? It's like, okay, guys, we need to get out of here. So at first you're thinking, okay, well, we have to worry about the doctor part, right? Okay, when we get to our rendezvous, we'll be fine. And then when it gets there, all of a sudden you're like, holy shit, now what? There's a lot of scenes throughout this entire, you know, series that is like that. That's just like, okay, now what? Like, what now? You know, now what do we do? Mm-hmm. So yeah, very classic Ronald Moore writing on this.
I mean that, and as much as there's a lot of scenes like this throughout the series, this one in particular just stands out a little bit more because, like we said, it's Ty's first major decision. He orders Lee to be put in the brig because mutiny, blah, blah, blah. But this is the first big thing he has to do. It immediately turns out bad. And you can't help. I mean, obviously you're worried as a viewer, but you also can't help but, you know, feel bad for Ty that like he doesn't want this sort of power, really, at least not in my opinion. He never wanted it. So yeah, I feel a little bad that he's like, we got to jump. We don't know if the Cylons are coming. And then, well, bam, they jump. There's no Cylons, but there's also no fleet.
There's also no fleet. Exactly. And you're absolutely right about Ty, right? He's a pain in the ass and he's a hard ass, you know, but he's not someone who's looking to be the fucking commander of the Battlestar. He's not, because you can even see it when he's freezing up, you know, when Captain Kelly's like, what's our orders? What's our orders? And he's just kind of sitting there like frozen because he has no idea what to do. So yeah, you can tell he was not ready for it and he just doesn't want it, you know, and he doesn't know exactly what to do.
Yeah, and it takes, the fleet reunites with them, is it the end of this episode?
Yeah.
The very, very end. So yeah. Yes, they all get back together for the most part, minus the fact that they, you know, left that survey team on Kobol, but it's a pretty tense episode. Don't get me wrong, it's no 33, but no, it's still
definitely in the same vein, though. It's in the same vein of it, right? Because when they have the virus where they network the Galactica and they're reaching out towards the end. It has that same kind of timer, that countdown with that anxiety that 33 gave you.
Yeah, for sure. All right. We want to move on to our next one because it's still...
Yep. Continuing with the theme of Ty making questionable decisions. Our number two top moment from these episodes is from the very end of episode 3, Fragged, in which he declares martial law.
I think we're kind of on the same page with this, that it ended up as one of our top moments, not just because he made the decision, period, but because it had consequences that played out throughout the first 9 episodes, like basically all the way to episode 8, Final Cut, in which one of the soldiers involved in the Gideon massacre, which took place under Ty's martial law / leadership, attacks Ty and Ellen. You know, even after Adama is back and they've backtracked on the martial law thing, it's still, it doesn't go away entirely. You know, it I'm pretty sure gets brought up. Now, granted, it has been several years since I rewatched the whole series, but I think it gets brought up even way past this. But yes, it still continues to play out. He knows it's a bad decision, I think, too. Like, he knows that Adama, I think he straight up says the old man wouldn't want this.
And you can tell. You can tell when he makes his speech. But when you think about it, it's like, what other options does this guy have at this point? Like, all of the leadership when it comes to the president is kind of like crushed now because she's arrested for like mutiny. And he doesn't have the patience to deal with the quorum or anything like that. And he's just like, you know what? Fuck it. I'm not dealing with this. Which is always like, to me, it's like interesting because you're kind of seeing of what could have downward spiraled into what our next episode is going to be about next time. When the military kind of does martial law and they just kind of never let it go. And, you know, they kind of start having a really heavy hand. And I think that's the thing with Ty, is that it's not that he was trying to like be heavy-handed with like authority or to be like, I think he just didn't know what to do. What else would anybody do in that position? I mean, are you going to reelect a new president at this point? Are you going to like, and then you have the fleet goes missing and then the silence of the, you know, at that finally he's just like, you know what, man, fuck it. Everyone go to bed. Like everyone's going to bed right now. Daddy needs time. I can't do this anymore. That's it.
Not to mention, you know, Ellen always there whispering in his ear, all of the bad ideas, or at least a lot of them, if not most of them, if not all of them, are some sort of byproduct of Ellen whispering in his ear, which...
Well, yeah, because she's like questioning his manhood and like all this kind of stuff. And like, oh, how can you let these people do it? And like, you can see Ty where you can actually see where Colonel Ty is, and actually he's a good guy. Like, he's actually a good man.
Oh, yeah.
But Ellen, there's just people that are good people separately. When you put them together, man, it's like toxic. And she is like the worst element in his life, period, you know?
Oh, yeah. And I've been in relationships like that where
me too.
Like, you know, that one person by themselves might not be completely toxic, but, you know, you put these two people together and it's a toxic relationship that makes one or both of the people in that relationship toxic. And it's the both in this case with Ellen. And God, she's not the best. Well, speaking of not getting a breather, for our number three top moment, we kind of unfortunately can't avoid touching on episode 5, The Farm, and Starbuck's experiences at the place that give this episode its name. Not just Starbuck being kept heavily sedated and a prisoner and undergoing that horrific quote unquote emergency surgery, but of course, yeah, she has a badass escape, but in that escape, she has to kill the women that the Cylons have turned into baby-making machines. And that's the wording of one of the women that Starbuck recognizes and talks to. And it's especially knowing what we know about Starbuck that later, you know, that came from this emergency surgery. It was basically like a hysterectomy from what I remember. I don't know if that's exactly what they would have called it or whatever, but it prevents her from ever having children. And so especially knowing that, with this being a rewatch, and also, of course, her having to kill these poor women who have been in these horrific conditions for who knows how long in some of their cases, it's, oh my God, it's so dark. And also it being sort of set side by side with this whole story of, we've kind of recently found out that Sharon is carrying Hilo's baby, and this baby is a product of their love, and that's the only way it can happen. But yet the Cylons are still fucking with these farms. Ew, guys. Ew.
Yeah.
I'm glad Starbuck blew you up, and I'm glad her, oh my gosh, what's his name? I'm thinking of the, I keep thinking Michael Trucco, and that's the actor's name. I don't know why I'm blanking. I'm blanking on the character's name. Her future husband stays behind to essentially like liberate any other to essentially liberate any other farms they find. And it's like, and of course, that's something that comes up later, because when Starbucks like, we got to go back, it turns out that not many people agree with her about that either. So she leaves him there to do this job. And oh my gosh. But
I was so onto that doctor, though, man. The second he walked in, like, I just knew. I was like, okay, dude, you know, because at this point, we kind of already knew that there's other Cylons in the fleet. So they're just kind of like introducing people. And I'm just like, yeah, any one of these people are going to come in. But the way he was, and the fact that there was no one else around, there was no sound of machines, there was no like nothing going on, just environmentally, right? And that's what I was kind of picking up on, that I was just like, damn. I'm like, this is some kind of prison. I mean, I certainly didn't think it was a baby making factory but I figured it was some kind of prison and stuff like that. But we do get the classic Kara Thrace stabbing this guy in the fucking face to like escape, right? Like just the way she would do something, exactly how she would do it, you know, which is fantastic, you know. And then like the kind of horror of her finding these ladies and then having to like get rid of them. I think that's the most scary part about like the Cylons, right? Or really about any type of like enemy, is that we're okay with them just killing us, you know, or killing people. Like, we're okay with that. But when they do things like that, it gets on a much different level at that point.
I've never wanted to give birth to kids, but I still don't want anybody touching my baby making parts unless I have explicitly given them permission to do so.
Exactly. And if I was tied to one of those machines, I would expect nothing less than my friends to destroy it along with me in the process. So I don't have to live in that horror, you know, like, nope, just do it.
Yeah, and I agree with you too. From the moment he starts talking to her, I almost wonder if it's meant for us to immediately, is it because the show has put that in us to mistrust every new character, or is it because of the way he is? And I think it's both in this case, because Starbuck she's immediately like, something about this ain't right. And granted, Starbuck is very, very smart and also doesn't trust anyone herself, but I do definitely think that we're meant to not trust him from the moment she wakes up and sees him and he starts talking to her and I'm not a Cylon.
But this is how they kind of like emotionally get you, right? You know, Ronald Moore was a big writer for Star Trek Deep Space Nine also. So who was the main antagonist of Star Trek Deep Space Nine? Well, it was the shapeshifters, and they can look like whoever, and they mimicked people that you knew, and they did all this, right? So I mean, really, it's really genius, because you kind of question everybody who walks through the door, and then you start questioning people who have been on the ship from the beginning, and you're like, wait a minute, maybe I don't know, you know, maybe. And it's like genius, right? Because it just breeds this like paranoia amongst it, you know, when you don't know who your enemy are, and they could be anyone, and it could be your best friend, you don't know, you know, like, fantastic. I love it. That's just classic
good. Funny enough, and I guess like we should always, I feel like now I realize now that we should always preempt these episodes with like all spoilers, alert, alert, alert. But I feel like if you're watching or listening to a Battlestar Galactica podcast, webcast, whatever, 20 years after it started, then you probably should understand that there's spoilers. But so big spoiler alert, guys, just speaking of like, oh, and of course they didn't know this. I don't even think the writers or showrunners knew this at the time, or what they were going to do with this at the time. But there is a point too in these 9 episodes where Tyrell is being like questioned. He's like, I'm not a Cylon.
Yep.
In response to the Cylon who's insisting he's a Cylon. Yeah. And it's like,
it was my favorite reveal. I think one of my favorite ones was that Cavill guy, right? When they arrest him and he's like, I'm not a Cylon. I'm not. And he looks at the other prison cell and there's another one of him and he's just like, oh, okay.
Like, fuck.
Yeah.
I don't even know. It's like, did he really not know? I can't remember actually. Did he really not know, or did he not think they knew? You know,
I think like he might have thought that they didn't know.
Yeah. Anyway, this guy though, he was super obvious, and
he was obvious. Yeah. It was pretty much anybody who they introduced brand new, right? But again, with Saunders, it was kind of the same thing though, because here you had this guy that was leading these people, and he was being very successful at his like running guns and all the stuff that he was doing, which to me, that made me kind of suspicious of him. Because I'm like, dude, everyone else on this planet failed.
Oh, it's now that you keep saying Saunders, it's Anders.
Anders, whatever.
Yeah.
Anders, yeah.
You said it the second time, yeah. And I was like, oh, no, wait, that's his name. All I could think was Michael Trucco, so go yeah. You. You got it.
There you go.
99.9%.
Almost right got it, yeah.
He's not important yet. He was just Starbucks sex toy for a bit.
Exactly. He's still a baby right now, so he'll grow up in the next season. But yeah, so, you know, because they introduce him and then you see how well he's doing on the battlefield and stuff. And I'm like, well, that's interesting. Who else did really well from running from the Cylons? Oh, Boomer and Hilo. Why was that? Oh, because Boomer was a fucking Cylon. That's why, you know, so that's what I thought of. And I was like, oh, okay. So that's sus. The doctor's sus. Like everybody's sus down. I'm like, shit, I don't know. Who
to. So Anders is like the Tom Brady of their like, whatever their, I can't even remember what the game, the pyramid. Yeah.
Pyramid. Yeah.
let's move on to number four, I think.
Number four, okay. It's D calling out Adama in episode 6, Home Part 1.
I wanted to put this one in here because it's not just D standing up to him and telling him that he has broken his promises to the people he claims to love, the fleet that he claims is family, but also her saying, I think you asked to talk to me because you don't think I have anything to say, but I do. That was really nice because Dee, you can't call her a background character even before this, but she does always seem like she cops attitude sometimes, particularly with Billy, but this is Adama, man. And she certainly never stood up to him that we've seen. And I would have assumed never before that either, obviously. Mm-hmm. And for her to call him out, I'm like, I know why you brought me of all people here. And guess what? I'm not going to be this sort of like shoulder for you to cry on, essentially. I mean, obviously, he's not crying. He's pissed. But this punching bag, maybe? I don't know. But I really loved her speaking up to him in this case and the way she put it, because she wasn't disrespectful. She was just saying things he didn't want to hear. And despite Adama originally dismissing her, let's say pretty brusquely, it's this conversation that leads to him finally deciding to head to Kobol in an attempt to reunite their family. Because at this point, this is from episode 6. So now the people on Kobol are the mutineers plus Starbuck, Hilo, and Sharon. The survey team has already been picked up, right? The people they believe are still loyal to them have already been picked up. They're going to reunite with the mutineers, including the president and, of course, his son. So this one conversation with Dee is really the biggest catalyst in, I think it's the biggest catalyst in him finally fucking coming to his senses. Him stopping, like stomping his feet, like, my son, he went against me. It's like, well, listen, you don't have to agree with your parents all the time. Even if they're your leader, you don't have to agree with your leaders all the time either. So put two and two together here. And I love Adama, don't get me wrong. But he really did deserve this kind of, you could call it a dressing down, but it's not really. Because like I said, D was still very respectful in doing it, I think, anyway.
Like, this is exactly why there needs to be like a ship's counselor on like ships. This whole scene was really weird to me, even when I first watched it, because it just seemed really off. Like, this would have been a great scene and it would have made more sense to me if this would have been D, like after she had married baby Adama, because it's like then they were like, OK, they're like friends or like a little bit more or kind of like Starbuck, you know, like they're kind of in that group now, you know. This one was just kind of really weird. And to just like have someone in there to just kind of like listen to you, it's like, dude, there's a lot of times when I need an outside perspective, you know, on things. But I promise you, it's not going to be like the rando acquaintance and I'm just going to have them stand here next to me while I talk to them and they don't say anything, you know, like it just came off as like super weird. I'm a huge fan of Dee and I love like the angle that she took with it. And I guess maybe that was part of the whole scene, was that that even just by the showrunners presenting that to us, that we thought that Dee was just not going to say anything, because maybe that's what they intended to do, was for it to kind of come off weird. Like, well, clearly Dee's not going to say anything, but she did. So, but overall that scene always felt out of place, or it felt like that's something that probably could have happened like way in the future and not necessarily at the time. It just seems kind of like, I don't know. It's kind of creepy to me. And I love Adama because he's probably my favorite character on the show, but it just, I don't know. Not the decision I would have made.
I mean, I think it comes off as less weird to me because we already had seen him put a completely inexperienced person into Apollo's job. And he's like, well, yeah, he's green, this new guy, he's green, but we can trust him. He's loyal. And maybe if that hadn't already happened, I would have felt weird about this. And again, you're right. It is weird that Adama is like, who am I going to vent to about how mad I am that people are untrustworthy and they broke our family? Yeah. Well, D, of course. So it is a little weird, but it's less weird, I think, because of decisions he had recently made. And again, I just go back to, as weird as it might have been, I think Dee did a fucking stand-up job.
She did a great job. It just would have made a little more sense to me if the delivery was different. Like if Adama just like pulled her aside and said, look, I want to pick your brain for a minute. I need an outside perspective.
I mean, she was dating Rosalind's assistant too. Keep that in mind. So well,
exactly, right? So you have someone that's kind of on both sides here, and I would have just sat her down and said, look, I'm trying to get an outside perspective. That's why I called you in here. But with him kind of doing his own thing and her just kind of hanging in the back and then him just dismissing her after saying that, even though he already went down that path, I personally believe that he would have went down that path anyway. Just from the way that conversation ended, I was just like, I don't know. It was just weird to me.
Well, and two, also, I think that keep in mind that D is far under his command level. So him dismissing her for speaking out of turn, essentially, and the way he does it in that sense is protocol in a way. Maybe not protocol. Mm-hmm. Maybe protocol isn't the right word, but it's probably the closest one to this situation. That mm-hmm. said, you also talk so much about how much the fleet is family and you love every person on the Galactica, et cetera, et cetera. And yeah, you can't treat one of your essentially underlings as a therapist and then get all that mad when she claps back at you with something you don't want to hear.
Yep.
So,
agreed.
Well, let's get into because we have so many other things to talk about after our top five, our final top five moment. And this one's a really good one. The Blackbird dedication ceremony in episode 9, which is called Flight of the Phoenix, and Tyrell announcing that the fighter is named Laura in honor of President Roslyn, of course. Listen, I can't even think about this without getting a little bit teared up.
Yeah.
Let alone watch it without doing so.
I tear up every single time I've watched it. I've probably seen that episode 5 or 6 times now.
Yeah,
and I always get teared up. Always.
I also got to love how Laura, despite being all choked up in the moment, as we all were right before she does what I'm about to talk about next, and she's still obviously like feeling all the things, actually teases them by acting like she's going to break the bottle of, I'm not going to call it champagne because champagne only comes from the Champagne region of France, and there is no France.
There is no France
in this universe. So yes, I guess. But she acts like she's going to break the bottle of sparkling wine on the Blackbird. This also, as somebody who likes some wine, makes me wonder how many bottles of wine or sparkling wine they can possibly have left at this point, and can't imagine they're going to be able to make any more anytime soon. But yeah, I do love, like, it's such a tearjerker, like a happy tearjerker moment, and then there's a levity right after that, and I think that's what really makes the whole thing like it just like punches you in the gut in the best way.
Yeah, it gives you all the feels. For me, this episode was very multifaceted for me. You know, obviously that scene is like the queen scene of the entire, you know, episode, because it just tops off so beautifully, right? But Battlestar is great with that. It's like, let's go back to the first episode of the season when they lost the fleet. You remember when they jumped back and it's got the overhead shot and you see like the little things coming out, the bays coming out, and then all of a sudden they're like, oh my God, we got Dreda's contact. It's not like they all came one, it was like one and then boom, and then you're like, oh my God, and there's this like sigh of relief. It's the same feeling we got in the episode 33 when she's like, oh, we have an update to the numbers, and he's like, well, take away how many, and he's like, actually you can add one. It's these little tidbits of hope that Battlestar does to make sure you don't like go over the edge, right? It's just fucking genius. But I loved that the chief realized that he was just kind of like burnt out going in this thing, and he needed something to kind of keep him going, right? A lot of people do this. I've done this in the past when I'm just like at a low point and it's like, okay, I'm going to do a project. I have to do something because this is what I have. And I have made that statement that he made to Colonel Ty many of times in my life, where I'm like, this is all I have. This is what I'm doing. You know, end of story. And I loved, you know, so he's doing that. He's made the, you know, the pretty much like the moonshine, right? Like the Galactica moonshine, whatever he's making under the thing. And he tries to play it off. It's like, oh, no, no, it's just solvent, you know? And Ty's like, man, come on. Like, yeah. You're talking to, he's an alcoholic. He knows his stuff. He's like, man, I know what that is. And he just kind of gets pissed. And he's like, look, that's all I got. This is all I have to trade with. And then as he's walking off, he's like, you know, I told my friend I'd do him a favor and get rid of these old garbage engines. Like, he was helping him out, you know, and he got a little bit of booze in the process. So that's good for him. But yeah, that was cool because you kind of got to see this little softer side of Ty where he kind of is onto it. Another scene is when nobody wants to do it at first. So everybody's like, nope, it's going to dumb. So the chief kicks them all out. And then there's like one person helping him. And then there's like two people helping him. And then all of a sudden there's a whole... And when Baby Adama shows up and is all like, oh, well, this blah, blah, blah. And Starbucks like, yeah, I don't know. I'm sitting here. I think it's supposed to be this. And then he's going to start being like, oh, and then D rolls out from the undercarriage with the thing, like doing something. I was like, nice.
Yeah.
I loved that. I thought that was a...
Yeah, it's a real like coming together moment, especially because Chief and Hilo have already been at each other's throats in this episode because of the obvious Sharon Boomer thing. It's just, it's such a good moment. And it was such a good thing to end this set of episodes on, especially knowing what we're going to be covering next, but we'll get into that eventually. Yep. For now, I think it's time to talk about some insights that we've gleaned from being longtime fans. As mentioned in previous Battlestar episodes, while we are covering this show, I'm going to refer to any Easter eggs or bloopers that I mention as Dean sites. Because my partner Dean knows far more about this series than I ever could and will not stop pointing things out to me, which means I've long ago lost track of what I knew before I knew him. So just to give a couple Dean sites, in the episode 3 Cobalt rescue scene, the one where they're picking up the survey team, Dean noted that there are no weapons mounted on the raptor that comes in and like shoots down the Centurions. Because at this point in the show, they hadn't actually come up with a weapons package for the raptors. So how did the raptor destroy the Cylons before rescuing Chief and the others? Like, there's nothing visible, and later there are visible weapons on them. Mm-hmm. So it's like, this is a really weird how if they had shown people hanging out either side and shooting, I don't know. It's very...
That would have been cool, actually. But yeah.
It would have, yeah. Then in episode 6, when President Rosalind, Starbuck, and the others are back on Kobol searching for the Tomb of Athena and are attacked by Centurions, they're able to take them out with regular bullets when earlier in the season, like just a few episodes before, when they're fighting them in the halls of the Galactica, they needed explosive rounds to take them out. So
it was literally like 4 episodes prior that they just talked about this, you know, and it's like, guys, wait a minute. Did they upgrade the bullets? Like, did they do something? Is the Cylons just using like cheaper metal now because they can't afford the metal they had before? But that's a good one because I never thought about that. That's the second time Dean's got me on something.
There's also a funny moment in that scene where they're fighting the Centurions when Starbuck is like shooting up a hillside. The way she's standing and the way the hillside is and where this, it's like, what are you shooting? You're just wasting bullets. You're just like shooting them into dirt or stuff. Unless the Centurion is like poking its head out above the...
I think, and it's funny that with like the shooting and the guns and all this stuff, the one thing that I just have to say is I love that their weaponry is just based on 21st century weaponry. You know, Starbuck is not, she's not dual wielding some like futuristic space weapon. The girl's dual wielding some Uzis, man. Like, she's doing a drive-by, you know, like
she got some Glocks.
Exactly. Like, I love that. Hell yeah, dude. Keeping it real.
But yeah, it's just super funny because like, what are you shooting at? What do you think you're hitting here, my girl?
Including the fact that the guns that she is using to begin with, those are close quarter combat guns. If you hit something from a far distance, it's because you did by accident. You know, like.
All right. So what about you? What are your personal insights from these episodes?
My personal insights, the interrogation scene with Gaius when he's going in there to interrogate the chief and Boomer, right? It's the way he walks in there. It's almost like he's a different person. Because even though that Gaius Boltar is like, he's very like devious, you know, and he is cocky on himself, he's never come off to me as kind of cold and calculated. He's never come off to me like that. So he walked in and was just looks back at the guards. He's like, yep, can you just leave us? And he's there with his like white fucking gloves, like what the fuck? And like his little doctor bag. And he just pulls it out and he opens it. And then he's like, I'm going to do a little test. And then Boomer's like, oh, well, the test doesn't work because I got past it. And he's like, no, it works. And he just injects the chief. And he's like, actually, he's like, I knew you were a Cylon. I just didn't say anything for my own benefit. And he's just saying this shit, just, hey, like nothing right now. In saying that, this whole scene is very, very well fucking played, because he literally is like, he knows he's not going to beat any information out of them. He's not going to drug them, torch them. No. He needs to do this real quick and real fast. This is one of the few times that you'll see Guys Boltar be like a fucking surgeon mentally, because he's kind of dumb, like when you really think about it. But he is extremely
He's a very dumb, smart person.
He's a very dumb, smart person. This is one of the very few times, I can't really think of another one, where he is being so calculated and so cold that he is a cold-blooded killer here. And he's just like, I'm going to make you talk. And he's like, I'm going to play you for you love him. Like, sure, no problem. Now I'm going to kill this guy that you love, unless you tell me this. I was like, shit, man. He played that love angle.
Hardcore.
Hard fucking core, dude.
Not something you'd usually say about Guys Boltar.
Yeah, exactly. You wouldn't say that. The most you can say is he's no more Mr. Nice Guys. That's it. But not fucking cold and fucking calculated. You know?
He was really no more Mr. Nice Guys in that scene.
In that scene, right? But the fact that he tells Boomer this, I'm like, dude, you just kind of played a heavy hand like against her, and you just told her this information of like, oh, I knew you were silent, I just didn't say anything, right? However, does it matter? It doesn't, because Callie goes all Jack Ruby on Boomer as they're escorting Boomer out, and she gets wasted. So it doesn't matter. And then going back to like one thing that I know that me and you had both talked about was the fact that Callie gets away with a slap on the wrist for that murder. Is it murder, though? When you really think about it, you know what I'm saying? Like at this point, it's a gray area because
very much.
Nope. Because technically they're robots, right? They're just organic robots. But it's like, bro, have you looked in the mirror? Aren't we just organic robots also?
I don't think, do they know this yet? Yeah, they do, that their consciousness just transfers to another body on the resurrection ship. I think they do.
Oh yeah. No, they do. Yeah, they do. Because they had said that, I think they said that like in the first season.
Yeah, it's pretty, it's really early. Yeah. But at the same time, it's still, like you said, it's still a very gray area.
It's a gray area. But I think it plays off really well, which will play off into our next episode also, is that the fact of like, think about some of the wars that we've even fought. We don't see the other people as people. They're just our enemies, and that's how we paint them. And so that way we can do whatever we want. But going back to like that Latin saying, you know, into arma, enim silent legis, which pretty much means in a time of war, the law falls silent.
In my opinion, I've never seen that Ronald D. Moore has said this, but there's a lot of like Vietnam War-esque themes in their fight with the Cylons. You know, we don't know who is and who isn't. We didn't know who was Viet Cong and who wasn't. So, you know, suspect them all, kill them all.
But that's what he's good at doing. He throws the real world into these stories.
For me, I'm going to be pretty brief with these. I want to say I like that we got to see Starbucks' apartment, her art especially. And Hila is like, you did these? They're very modern art. And whether or not that's your thing, it all feels very Starbucks. The fact that she like wraps herself in the old jacket, she puts on that really beautiful music. That's her father's music. And it's nice. You see the Starbucks that doesn't have any food in her apartment, and the Starbucks who's like, everybody else wants to go back. And I don't. I thrive in the environment we're in now, and I didn't thrive in this sort of environment. So I think it's really the first time we actually see that deep into her past and her character. So I've always really liked that we got to see that stuff.
And just to kind of like piggyback, you know, on your statement there, it's very true, because it's the first time you kind of get to see like the real Cara Thrace, right? Mm-hmm. Yeah, she's a badass, she's a great pilot, and she likes to smoke cigars, and she likes to drink, and she likes to fuck. Okay, great. But when you go home and you're like, holy fuck, you're a painter. Oh shit, your dad was a musician, you know, and you're walking around in his jacket. You know what I'm saying? Like, I think for me, this is kind of what made her character more relatable.
And then again, just another brief one, when Boltar lies about how Crashdown died saying that he died like leading the charge against the Cylons on Kobol. Then after just like half a moment of hesitation, Chief backs him up and calls Crash Down a hero when like none of that is obviously true.
No.
But also it's kind of like it's what everybody needs to hear in that moment. And it's always been very interesting to me that Baltar was the one who was like, yeah, this is how he died. Also, yet another triumphant Starbuck return to the fleet. Second one so far, guys. And we know these really rack up in the end. So again, just a brief, like, keeping track. We're on number two now, and we're only in the second season. The other thing is a little bit more just like, what the fuck is happening here? I think it was Home Part One, maybe, when Zarek is having a conversation with whatever the character that James Remar, I don't remember his name, but the actor is James Remar. And weird, I had totally forgotten he ever was in Battlestar at all. He's only in like these couple episodes, but still. When him and Zarek are talking, and Zarek apparently actually thinks that he might have a chance of being put in charge of the fleet. And it's like, what?
Like, what?
No. Why? Why would you be? You aren't even in the military, my dude.
Yeah.
Let's like set aside the fact that you were put in prison for being a terrorist, and that even your fellow politicians don't really trust you. Why would you, not a military person, ever be put in charge? It was just a weird, like, actually, Dean was like, I don't remember this either. And we were both just sitting there like, what? Why?
Yep.
I don't know. It's just, my only insight is what? Why?
Why? Exactly. How did you get there? You know, like, how did you get to that conclusion?
And like, my original rule was that we were going to stick to 2 to 3 insights a piece. But since you only did 2, I'm doing a couple extra. I tried to give some of these to you, but, and actually I was going to leave this one off, but the reason I'm bringing it up is earlier we were talking about how, oh, whenever somebody new comes on the scene, you immediately suspect them, right? Mm-hmm. But also there was the whole thing with the doctor in the farm episode where it's more like there's something about him that you immediately know you can't trust. So when Deanna Beers comes in at the beginning of episode 8, Final Cut, you're immediately like, what is going on here? Because she's showing this footage that she somehow got of the Gideon massacre, which is what she calls it. It wasn't not, but you're immediately not trusting of her. But then by the end of the episode, what she actually produces as her little documentary thing is very pro fleet or pro military. It's very pro military. So by the end of that episode, you're like, oh, okay. So she was just a reporter trying to do her job, right? She got footage of this admittedly terrible thing that happened when they were under martial law that shouldn't have happened. She presented it as, yeah, guys, this is what they're not telling you. Okay, like, understandable, right? Press, they be doing what they doing. But then she spends the time with them and she, you know, has all these interviews, has all these different angles, sees what happens with Kat, with the Stims, and all this other stuff. And what she produces is, it's pro-military in the sense that it's showing that they are real people who are doing the best that they can with what little they're being given in this situation. So you go from, I don't know about this, to, oh, okay, like, she saw the real thing. She saw the real truth, and that's what she put out. But of course, we know that she actually do be...
And that's, look, the only reason I knew she was going to be a Cylon was because it was fucking Lucy Lawless. And I'm like, they're not going to grab Lucy Lawless and just bring her in as a one shot or some random reporter. She's going to have to have a big fucking role. And then I was like, Lucy Lawless would make a great Cylon, actually. And she does. I was very happy to see her like back, because I think that was one of the first bigger things I had seen with her in it after Xena, you know?
Well, and I think that's like, I was in like Xena mindset. So I was like, at first, oh, it's Lucy Lawless, but like, she's also doing this like very anti-military thing when this whole show is about how the military is constantly like doing their best to save all these people. Well, almost constantly. They do try their mostest of the time. But yeah, I was a little bit surprised that she turned out to be a Cylon after what she churned out at the end of that episode.
But you know, they're all manipulators, so maybe that was it.
Like, of course, yeah. It does make me wonder, did this version of Deanna Beers know she was a Cylon at this point?
That's a good point, because I don't think they ever tackled that. You just see her at the end. You know,
if they did, I certainly don't remember. So if anybody is watching or listening and recalls whether or not this version of Deanna Beers knew that she was a Cylon, I would love to hear. But yeah, I don't recall that she did. And that could be part of it too. But it's definitely, it's interesting that in these 9 episodes, you get new Cylon who is like so obviously a Cylon that I would be shocked if anybody watching it trusted him, you know, any more than you or I or Starbuck did. And then at the end we get, okay, well, questionable person, new person. And then she kind of turns out to give us something that's not what we expected. And it's like, oh, well, she's all right. Right.
I just knew. I was just like, look, I saw Lucy Lawless and I'm like, nah, I know. She's not going to be just some camera person on this show. She's going to want it all because it's Lucy Lawless and she deserves it.
Well, honestly, like we got through these way quicker than I thought we would. Any like last thoughts about these 9 episodes or what we're looking forward to or not so much in our next?
Yeah, what we're getting ready to walk into next time. No, I feel like these episodes were straightforward. What I do like about it, and what I like about most of the story arcs in Battlestar, is that they don't last very long. All the like sub arcs, it's a very small period of time, because there's shows that I've watched that drive me crazy when it's like, oh my gosh, like, is this guy going to kiss this girl? Are they going to hook up? And then meanwhile, fucking 10 seasons later, it's like, oh, they finally did. I hate that so much. But with Battlestar, it's wonderful because it's like, okay, this is what it is. So this little arc that had us, you know, our blood pressure up and all this stuff ended just in time for the next blood pressure rise, right? But it was like 9 episodes, ba-bam, we're done, right? And then we're going to have our another arc that's going to be half that size, and then it's going to go into the next one, you know? So at least like the little sub arcs are nice, short and sweet.
I think that one thing that we didn't touch on at all, and it's mostly because I personally don't really have any strong feelings about it, even though maybe I should, is the Tomb of Athena stuff, you know, where they actually find the tomb and Starbuck puts in the arrow that she brought back from Caprica, and they end up in this sort of magical like place. That's always, I know that this show isn't all completely based in reality, okay? And also, I don't mean just in sci-fi, because there's so many things that happen later, like with Starbuck especially, that I get it. But especially because at this point, obviously, if you are watching it for the first time, you don't know the Starbuck stuff that's going to happen later. It's still, there's just so much realism in it, that this sort of magical realism moment where they end up in this place where the stars light up on the stone, on the fucking Stonehenge, essentially, and they realize that they are on Earth and they're seeing the constellations and everything. It's just like, when I saw it the first time, I was like, oh, okay, weird that this is where we're going now.
It comes off weird, okay. Right? Yeah, yeah, because we just...
And I don't mean like in a bad way. It's just like...
No, it's just that it's different. Because the thing with like, I've never seen Battlestar Galactica as science fiction. I always saw it as a drama that just happened to take place in space. That's it. That's why I've always looked at it, right? Because all their technology is based on real stuff. It's based on real science. It's based on like, you know, I can see our world being there in the next 500 years, where it's like, okay, well, that's what we do. Because so it doesn't seem hokey, right? Like it doesn't seem like there's any like fictional technology going on there. So yeah, when they bring up the arrow and like all this stuff, then it's like this like weird magic magician kind of,
I mean, and to be fair, some of the stuff about the Cylons is certainly the stuff about Hilo and Sharon being able to conceive a child, but only because they're in love, is a little bit hokey. But for some reason, it would, none of that stuff ever really like stuck in my craw. And not that this does in a bad way and by any means, but it's always just been one of those things where it's like, I think maybe it's supposed to be more important than I personally find it. So maybe that's like, maybe that's the issue, quote unquote. Cause again, I'm not saying it's bad or anything. I'm just saying it doesn't, it's never like really stuck out to me as this, yes, it's important because okay, this is how they're going to find Earth, but knowing that they go through so much other shit and end up just kind of like chilling on New Caprica for a while before they even bother with continuing on with this information that they apparently just discovered from the Tomb of Athena. Maybe it's more that, maybe that's what it is. And I'm, I don't know if I love or hate the fact that I'm kind of realizing certain things as I'm talking about them, but maybe it is the fact that they still go through so much and they still try to make a home on New Caprica and just so much other shit happens before they come back to, yeah, but what about that time we were in the tomb of Athena and we saw the constellation? Shouldn't we work on that a little bit more, guys? I don't know. Well,
but it's kind of cool though too, right? Because you do have kind of two extremes there, and the people who like went and they're like, no, we're going to stay in New Caprica, they believed all that shit was hokey. So they're like, we're not going to chase some fairy tale. Like, fuck that shit. This is our best chance of survival. This is where we're staying from now on, period. And they did a good job on putting a big divide between the people that believed in it and the people that didn't. There wasn't really people in the middle. So, I mean, really, when I think about it, yeah. I'm like, yeah, okay, I guess they did a good job on that. Maybe because they showed it, I think maybe was a little separation of reality there, right? So maybe if they wouldn't have showed it, if they would have just, or if it would have been done in like a way, like just in a more like archaeological way, where it's like, oh, we found this temple and in this temple, there was these things. Not, oh, all of a sudden we're on Earth and I can see the stars and like all this stuff where it seems more magical. Maybe if they just went into a temple and was like, hey, look at the writings on the wall. Look at it. These are all constellations. Then I think it would have still grounded that weird,
like a building rises up from the ground, a dome rises up from the ground around them, and they're in like one of those star things where, you know what I mean, like
exactly.
Again, I am not complaining or saying anything bad by any means, but there's even like Hilo and Sharon, either they explain it away as like, oh, Hilo is able to get Sharon pregnant because they're in love, and it's like, I don't know, maybe Hilo just has super sperm.
Exactly, maybe their genes are just compatible.
Women go like decades without getting pregnant without proper birth control, and then suddenly they're with one guy who just has super sperm, and it's like, oops.
Yeah, exactly.
Even with like certain forms of birth control going on, and you know, obviously Gaius with head six is like, Gaius is not right in the head in so many ways, and you can write a lot of that off as like schizophrenia, as PTSD, etc. There's so much of this that can kind of be explained away as still being part of this like realism that they use to tell the story, but this definitely felt more magical realism. Again, like I think if they had done more with it in the immediate, I probably would, as a person who's watched the series so many times, I'm like, oh yeah, this is super important. But then it's because I know how much they still go through after this and the decision to settle on New Caprica, because there's so many people who still are like, yeah, what the fuck are you guys talking about? We're not going to keep going. Yeah. So, all right. I think we're done. I cannot believe we only took like an hour to cover 9 whole episodes.
I know, man. We're going to have to start.
We're really on point.
Yeah.
No, we don't though. That's the thing. Like, we're so used to just shooting the shit for like an hour and a half to 2.5 to 3. And it's like, oh my gosh. Well,
we come in here like fucking surgeons. We're like, all right, look, the fucking Blackbird scene, right? Yep, that's it, right? You know?
And then... Yeah, I mean, maybe it helps that we both watched the series so many times.
Yeah.
Even though you got your...
I almost remembered his name.
I'm going to call him Colonel Saunders from now.
Colonel Saunders. Colonel, my Colonel, so crispy.
Like... He's delivering those flavors of fried chicken to Starbucks anyway.
That lovemaking was finger licking good.
Oh my God. I want a picture of like a fucking Kentucky Fried Chicken drumstick with Anders' face on it. Oh God. Okay. As we close out the episode, just want to give a shout out to our heroes, to your patron, Tommy of the TKOK Podcast Network. Thank you so much for supporting us. And thank you for joining us for our third Media That Made Us episode on the first 9 episodes of Battlestar Galactica Season 2. For the most current news and updates about the series, make sure to follow @AGeekSaga on Facebook, Instagram, TikTok, Threads, Twitter. I will say that we do have, I haven't scheduled it like physically, virtually, I guess is probably a better word. I haven't scheduled it virtually yet, but we will be back on Wednesday, October 9th at 8 p.m. Eastern live to talk about the Pegasus arc. Yeah, it's going to be a dark one, guys.
It's going to be dark, guys. Get ready.
And in the meantime, please consider backing our Patreon at patreon.com/geeksaga_entertainment.
Thank you for listening to the Geek Saga podcast. If you like what you heard, please check out other Geek Saga entertainment endeavors, including the Sagas and Sass webcast and podcast, and Ice and Fire Con.